What is going on, guys? Welcome back to the Eric Roberts Fitness Podcast. Today we have another very, very special guest on, and this is a guy that I actually respect quite a bit because I am actually working with him right now on my body. And if anybody knows me, I take my body very seriously, and I don't tend to listen to people very well. So if you're listening to this guy, then you guys should probably listen to him too. My boy Karan, what's going on, man?
Hey, man. All is good, my brother. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I appreciate the kind words. It means so much, for real.
Of course, man. Yeah, no doubt, man. Like I said, since I started working with you, man, I definitely respect you a ton, and you know your shit. So that's, for me, that's a big thing. Just giving a quick background of you, man. I've kind of talked to you about my story a little bit on my Instagram story, but just give a little background of yourself.
Yeah, for sure. So my name is Karan Hawkins. I'm from New York originally. Right now, I'm in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Little quick, brief overrun of me. I actually didn't even start in fitness. I was very unathletic growing up. And what kind of sparked me into movement first was dance. I love the way that I could speak through my body with dance and kind of tell a story. And I actually went to Carnegie Mellon for information systems and business, kind of like a computer science business hybrid. So it wasn't fitness related at all. But I started with fitness doing the Insanity program that jump started me into like, oh my God, I like being shredded. I like being, you know, really cardiovascularly strong and strong in general, fast, agile. And after that, I was working at a job that I didn't enjoy very much. I was a, typical corporate guy working the desk job, sitting, you know, all day, just kind of what it felt like wasting my life away. No offense to anyone that enjoys corporate work. It's just not for me. And I ended up quitting that job and I went back to school to get my master's degree in exercise physiology from the University of Pittsburgh. Worked at a couple gyms, realized I could do this shit on my own and just left. And I'm an entrepreneur. Rest is history.
That's awesome, man. Are you, I never asked you this actually. Are you a Steelers fan?
No.
Okay. Thank God. I know a lot of my clients are Steelers fans. I
It's like, you know, I'm here. So like, if they're playing someone I don't like fuck with, like if they're playing the Giants, you know I'm gonna be a Giants fan. Yeah. But otherwise, like I am a Steelers fan. But if they're playing the Giants, I gotta stay home to my roots. Right. You know what I'm saying?
All right, that's fine. Yeah. So okay, that's fucking awesome, man. I didn't know that side of you actually, so that's pretty cool. So you said dance. As far as dance, was that in lieu of sports? Did you do sports on top of that? Like what was that kind of part of you?
Yeah, so like I said, I wasn't athletic at all. So, I made two varsity teams my entire high school career. It was for javelin and, no shit, football was JV. I mean, we did really well that year, but track.
That's because of you.
track was literally my only varsity sport. I threw javelin in high school. I fucking loved it. Javelin is such an amazing sport. But dance was something that didn't require me to have like specific skills. I could just like express myself, you know what I mean? But I didn't make the basketball team. I got cut from that shit. I didn't make the varsity football team. I didn't make I didn't even try baseball because, you know, no thank you. But pretty much every sport that I tried besides my senior spring track, I just got cut and didn't make it. So dance was something that I could just teach myself. And dude, I'd be in the mirror for fucking hours, just like trying different techniques over and over and over and over again until I perfected it. And then I would move on. But yeah, dance has been something that's been with me since I was 12 years old and I'm 25 now. So it's been a long time.
Yeah. And I think that's almost like an important point to hit on. I didn't know we were going to hit on this, but like, I think a lot of people think the fitness industry and like us trainers and coaches is like, oh, dude, we're fucking jocks. Like, you know, heavy lifting, football, like, you know, whatever it is. But like you just said, like you're unathletic. You come from like this stigma around like this whole like you have to be a jock or like so into like, you know, lifting heavy weights and stuff like that to be a fitness coach is not the way it is at all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I became very athletic and I became strong and, you know, more in tune with my body later on in my career, but 100%, I didn't really like sports. I didn't really enjoy physical activity. Like I freaking hated the gym. The first time I went to the gym, I worked out with my boy. His name was Gun, actually. He's from Thailand. He was a wrestler, strong as shit, bro. Like stupid strong. Like dude was like, how much was Gun? Gun was like 130 pounds benching like fucking 200, 210 for reps. Like it was just easy for him. Nuts. You know what I'm saying? Like nuts. And the first time we worked out together, we did biceps and back, like way back. And I kid you not, my arms were stuck at 90 degrees for a fucking week because I'd never lifted before. He was like, "All right, bro, we're gonna do rows, we're gonna do bent over rows, we're gonna do 21s, like 10 sets." Like I couldn't even fucking move. It was nuts. But
That's hilarious.
I didn't start that at all.
Yeah, and that's I think that's key for even like a lot of like our clients is like I don't like if you're not if you do work a desk job or if you haven't come from like sports or being really athletic, like you can still really get into this shit and you've made a whole career out of it, a whole business out of it. So it's like I think for even a lot of like our clients and people listening, it's like you don't have to be the fastest or the strongest or the most in shape. Just fucking do it, man. Just get started and get at it. So I think that's a huge point. I did want to ask you too about you said you know you realize you do this shit on your own. Like at what point did you realize, hey, I can do this shit on my own? And then at what point were you like, hey, let's actually make this fucking jump and do it?
Absolutely. The first time I had a sliver of belief in myself was in corporate America. I was like, dude, I'm unhappy. The first, I won't lie to you, I didn't come from that much. I mean, we weren't like, you know, homeless or anything, but we didn't have a lot of money growing up. So the first time I was financially independent was like a big deal to me. It was like, wow, I don't have to ask my mom for anything. Like, I can help her. I can support her and kind of give back the way she gave to me. You know, that monetary excitement wore off in a month. It was like 1 month of doing my own thing, buying Zara suits and just kind of doing what the fuck I wanted. Like that shit blew off real quick because 8 hours of my day was spent unhappy. And I was like, dude, my whole life is going to be like this. Fuck that. And I just said, I don't want to do this. I just left. So that was the first time where I said, you know what? I can make a career out of this fitness shit that I'm just doing for fun and that I'm so passionate about. And the second time was I was working at Crunch and I wasn't making very much money. I was a front desk attendant and I was teaching group X classes. I was actually personal training people for free, like 10 people for free on the side, just literally free. And it was just like, yo, I could actually do this for real. People were like, yo, I have to pay you. Like, I'm not taking for free anymore. Because I would travel to people's houses, I would walk, I'd bus, I'd Uber, whatever it took, and I'd go to people's houses and train them. And then I started charging $15 an hour for students, and I would charge $30 an hour for adults. And I was seeing a little bit of, you know, chump change here and there, but once my my student loans wore off and I had no money, I couldn't afford to eat. I couldn't afford many things, like that's if you know Gary Vee, obviously. So that was my eat dirt time for like a year. I was eating dirt. I wasn't like, you know, starving or anything for that long. Maybe like a month or so I wasn't really eating. It was like I was on a protein pancake rice diet
for ramen like noodles, baby. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was struggle busting for real for about a month. And then I started changing up, increasing my prices, changing things around, and I was okay again. But that time when I was just kind of doing it for free, and then people were like, yo, I'm going to pay you. I was like, wow, people really respect this shit and they'll pay me. So I just quit and I just started. I was like, fuck it. Like, I'm going to just see what I could do with this. And, you know, now I'm here. There's a lot of stuff in between that, but, you know, just kind of give you an origin story of how that happened.
Yeah. And I want you to say it one more time for the people. You worked for free. Nobody owed you shit. Like, so many people don't understand that. Like, coming from humble beginnings, like, I almost have kind of like the same story. Like, by any means, we weren't broke or like we weren't this or that. But like, growing up, like, I actually grew up in a wealthy community, but me and my family weren't a part of that like wealthy side of it. Like, for one of my best friends, like, birthday, he got like a fucking brand new Mustang gifted to him, and I was like, what the fuck? Like, I don't even know what the fuck is going on here. But it's like,
coming
from those humble beginnings, and like, yeah, you might want a lot of shit, but like, you work for free. Like, you charge $30 an hour when most people charge like $100 an hour. Like, people don't understand like the work that goes into like building your own business, building your own brand, like doing all this thing. So I think that is, I have a ton much more fucking respect for you now because I didn't know that, but that's fucking sick, man. Like, that's, I really, really respect that. And then, so one more thing you said is did you even ever train in the person, like in the fitness industry space? Cause like you didn't actually, you were a front desk staff, right?
Yeah. I, in, that's at a dope, gym, man. I didn't train anybody because, I mean, there was some beef between the trainers and the administration because, I mean, you know, those big gyms, they fucking undercut the trainers like a motherfucker. Like, and I was I ain't doing that shit. Fuck that. So I figured, you know, if I actually did the math, I was like, dude, I can charge this much and make just as much as I would at a big gym. So I was like, fuck it. I'm just doing it myself. And I don't get capped at a certain amount of clients, so I can just get as many as I want. I hadn't even thought about online stuff yet. But yeah, dude, like I said to myself, I'm gonna charge what I'm worth. You know what I'm saying? And I'll give you a quick thing. I charge $30 for adults, and like 95% of my clientele were students. I was like, oh man, they got loans to pay. I was a student, like I get that shit. So I charge $15 an hour, dude, $15. And oftentimes I'd stay overtime. I wouldn't even look at my watch. It'd be like 10, 15 minutes over. It's like, oh, okay, I should go now. And they're like, oh yeah, thank you so much. See ya. So yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, but I think that's almost like why you're successful now is because you have like you started off having that empathy of like, man, these kids are students, they have loans. Like you understand the human side of it. Yeah, of course you charge more now, but like you start off from like actually understanding the human, the consumer, like who you're training, why you're training them, like all that kind of stuff. So I think that is like a huge thing. And then you talked about online, and we don't have to go all the way into it, but like, what do you think like you training people in person made you into a good online coach?
Yeah, good question. So I think everybody who wants to get into the fitness space, especially online, and you can ask any respectable coach, they'll agree with me. You need to be with people in person. You need to be with people in person. The reason I say that is because you teach differently, you speak differently, you cue differently when you learn how to dynamically like modify someone's movement like in person. It's so different because you can see the nuances. When you're online and you're just like giving shit and have calls and check-ins and they say, oh yeah, you know, this didn't feel right, this, you'll be like, oh yeah, you know, pull your shoulders back or some shit like that. But if you don't really understand the body from working with someone in person and like actual people, it's so different. And I think that has been integral in, I won't say my ultimate success. I'm still building, I'm still working, but, you know, the success I've had so far with the online stuff, because I understand, how to work with someone in person. And I've seen that translate to the online space. I basically think if this person were right in front of me, what would I say and what would I do? And then I say that and I interpret that online.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that, I mean, that's, again, it's huge because the other thing I'll add to that point is like, you got to understand people and how they react to cues, but like just how they like react in general. If you don't know how somebody reacts when, you know, they just got off a 9-hour work day, they've been working with their kids all day, whatever it is, like they're coming to work out for an hour or whatever it is, like you have to understand that. Like you have to understand the emotion on these people's faces and what they're going through and how their day is. And like, I think that's huge, man. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. The next thing I want to dive into is, I mean, what has changed? What has changed from when you just started to where you're at now? As far as training?
Yeah, for training specifically, a lot more education. I've been, dude, like when I say I go into the rabbit holes, like I go into the rabbit holes. Like I try to find as much information on the human body and movement, not just from like a biomechanics standpoint, but from a physiological standpoint. Like how is this training going to impact your physiology? Like how you adapt to stress inside the gym and outside? Like how is that interplaying with your life stressors and, you know, in your relationships and your business, or if you're working for someone, your job? Like how does all this fit into the big picture? Because when someone works with me, I don't want to just get them shredded. Like anybody can do that. Like I want to teach them how to get shredded while understanding all the other variables that come with that. Like when to know when to deload, when to, you know, for nutrition, when to increase your carbs for this or that, or decrease, or, you know, protein this for a cut, or if I'm just maintaining, what am I, like understanding how to be intuitive with the body and respond to things, just be in tune. Bro, so many people are so out of touch with their own bodies. It's insane. Like when I start working with some people online, sometimes, not all the time, like I've been getting a lot more like coaches and trainers, so they kind of understand their body a bit better. But just a gen pop person, I'm like, all right, what'd you feel in that one arm row? Oh yeah, you know, the front of my shoulder, maybe some bicep, a little elbow actually. I'm like, what about your lats? What's that? Like,
no clue.
So many people don't know how to actually thoracically rotate, depress the scapula, and feel that lat pocket. Like, that's where the meat of a one-arm row is, and no one's doing that. And I see, I don't like to throw rocks at anybody, but I'm just being honest. I see people on Instagram cueing one-arm rows, and they have anterior glide of the shoulder. They have no thoracic rotation. They have very bicep and, like, arm-dominant rows. And I'm like, bro, you are creating – who gives a fuck if, like, they're going to be in pain? They're you're creating this, like, motion and movement pattern that's going to be ingrained in their brain. So when they try to do it differently and actually get the spine rotating, because your fucking lats and your spine are bigger than your arm. So, like, those muscles are going to be the main movers of a one-arm row. And if you're not teaching people how to use their spine and not use their arm, they're going to run into issues. Because when they're lifting heavier and eventually their shoulder and their arm have reached their capacity, that's when issues come. You know, that's when they start to arise. They're going to get scapular elevation, a lot of anterior glide. So you're stressing that bicep tendon in the front, and then shit's just going to get fucked up. And reteaching that motion, let alone the pain that comes along with it, is so much harder, because your body is a summation of your experience and the stress and the adaptation you've come into. You and I have talked a lot about that, like, an unintentional movement when you're trying to do something, right? Someone will try to depress their scapula and they'll go like this. They'll, like, right? Or they'll try to retract and their ribs will flare, or they try to do protraction and their neck goes forward, or just anything like that. Those movement patterns are ingrained in you, and it's not like a form thing. I'm not big on form. Obviously, there's lifting like an idiot and being, you know, reckless, but, you know, I'm not super into, like, there's one objective form to do something, right? There's always a different way to execute, but it depends on the client and their goals, right? If someone wants to grow their lats and their anterior glide in their shoulder and their rows are bicep dominant, they're not going to grow their lats, point blank. So for that context, yes, I want them to rotate their spine. I want them to do this. I want them to do that. But if they're doing, like, a bilateral, like, seal row or something like that, yeah, they want to hit their lats, but they're going to hit their biceps a lot because there's no rotation at the spine, right? So it's all dependent upon the person. And that's why I got into online, and that's why I like in-person as well. But for online, I can bring that individualization to a bigger audience and have more impact. That's why I post on Instagram so much about, like, it's very specific. Everyone's different, because I want people to start questioning, like, the cookie cutter packages of, like, yeah, you know, standard stuff, push, pull, rotate, hinge, whatever. But how does that impact your body? How does that impact your experience, your movement capability, your mobility, your stability, right? What does all that come into play with you trying to make change to your body?
Right. Dude, you just said a lot right there, but a lot of it is fucking truth, and it's something a lot of people need to hear. I will make one quick comment about the Instagram. It's such a double-edged sword, because at one moment, yeah, these people, I mean, I will say the same thing. They're fucking morons. Like, when they do these movements and you create these false patterns, people think that, oh, that's how you do a one-arm row, or, oh, that's how you overhead press. Like, no, like, you're creating the wrong thing. But at the same time, when somebody like myself or someone like yourself comes along, that's the great part about the social media and whatever it is. You can put your own spin on it, and you can put the right spin on it. And if you're putting that content out for a good reason, I think people are going to see it, and they're gonna get a good result from it. So I think that's very huge. It's a double-edged sword, but I think the positives definitely outweigh the negatives there.
Absolutely.
What you just said, it leads me into the next thing is, as far as, like, fitness coaches, like, you know, there's so many different areas you can go into. You can go into nutrition. Like, I know our friend Cody McBroom, he's big into nutrition, right? So it's like there's so many areas you can kind of put yourself into and kind of be an expert in that field. Why did you choose the very in-depth movement side? Like, what brought you to, like, I want to know how these joints rotate. I want to know what my thoracic spine does. How did you get dive into that part of it?
This is where I just, like, kind of leave it on the table, because I was fucked up. My body was hurting. Like, insanity. I did insanity every day for, like, a year.
Fuck, man.
Yeah. I had no idea. I didn't know. Like, no shade to insanity. It was made a long time ago. We've learned a lot more about the body. There are places for something of that level of intensity, maybe for not as long and maybe for not as vigorous, but there are avenues for high intensity training, like actual HIIT, where it's like short bursts of like 5 to 10 seconds of work. Like that is applicable, and that you can make real adaptations, especially for athletes and at an athletic level for force production and learning how to adequately produce force through the entire body. However, doing high volume, high intensity work over time just breaks down the body. My knees were fucked up. My ankles were fucked up. My shoulders were fucked up. My lower back was fucked up. Like everything hurt. And that's when I said to myself, yo, I stretch every single day and I'm still tight. I'm still in pain and nothing's changing. So the first person that really got me into movement specifically, and that's just kind of where I'm drawn to. I wouldn't consider myself an expert in any of this stuff. I would just say, though, I am more knowledgeable about movement than nutrition. I have been diving a shit ton into nutrition and the gut and how that gut-brain axis and, you know, calories, macros. Like, I understand that stuff, but I just felt more drawn to movement because I'm a dancer. I've been moving my entire life. So it's like something that's really been calling me. But Hunter Fitness, I don't know if you know that account on Instagram. He was the first person that really got me curious about the body. It's like, yo, what the fuck is this guy doing? Like, he's basically Gumby. Like, he can put himself into any position he wants, pretty much. And it just blew my mind. And I started learning about FRC. I started learning about functional range systems, like all that shit. And I just like dove, man. I reached out to people to get them on my podcast and just. I interviewed Ian Marco, Alex Chung. I interviewed Clayton Weekly, Clayton Moves on Instagram. I interviewed DJ Murakami, Strong Camps, John Ewan, Majestic Murph. Like, I interviewed so many people in the space and just like learned, like, what is mobility? What does this shit mean? Like, how does it apply to my body to help me reduce pain, increase movement, and like not be so goddamn tight all the time? And after that, I just started learning. I invested in online kin stretch. So like basically a mobility class with my guy, Coach Zach Deck out in Florida. I invested in personal mobility coaching myself online and in person with my guy, Clayton. I just like, if it was like, yo, if this is going to help my body, I just fucking threw money at it. I didn't give a shit. And recently I've been working with my guy, Jordan out in California, Flowbility. He's dope too. But dude, I just like made the investment. I said, yo, this is my body. I have one fucking body. I am not going to live in pain. So
yeah, that's dope, man. Because like, there's so many different areas you can dive into. But like you said, if you were into that dancing, that's what you were just kind of drawn to it. Like the thing I love about fitness is there's not just one concrete box you have to stick yourself into. There are so many things you can kind of also, I mean, you can tap into, like you said, you're tapped into nutrition, all this kind of stuff, but you're going into the, like in the mobility and moving section, and that's where you're going to be an expert, but that's what you're passionate about. So like, if you can be passionate about that, you can portray that passion to other people in your online coaching, and you can be successful because you're fucking passionate about it. Right. Unlike what you're doing in that 9-to-5 corporate job. So like, right. I think that's fucking awesome, man. You said one thing about stretching and you're always tight. The one thing that I ask people is like, you know, well, does your back hurt? And I'll say, I don't know why I say it, but I'm like, hey, do you stretch? I'm like, why the fuck am I asking if they stretch? I don't understand. Like, so can you go into like the static stretching and why it might not be the best? It might be the easiest, but it might not be the best for maybe that reason.
Yeah. So to do this, I'll preface this with the difference between passive flexibility and active mobility. So passive flexibility is just the ability for tissue in your body that's obviously muscle, but that's joints, ligaments, tendons, to be moved through a certain range of motion without active load being applied to it. So like, think about, you know, you're laying on your back and someone's just kind of pushing your leg for a hamstring stretch, right? They are helping you get into that range of motion. They are actively pushing you into that hip flexion to allow the hamstring to stretch. Active mobility is strength, essentially. It's being able to access positions with your own joints, your own ligaments, your own muscles, your own tendons, and your own musculature to access that range of motion. So take that same stretch, right? You're laying on your back and someone's pushing you with their hand. Take away the hand. Lift your leg as high as you can, and I bet you're going to feel your quads cramp, right? And the reason for that is when you take out that active sense, you're basically not allowing one side of the joint to do work. When people are stretching each other, they are only thinking about how can I get this muscle to elongate? And yes, you'll have changes short term, But your body is very smart. It's very adaptive, and it basically functions based on principles of stress. And stress is one of the most important things that we can use to make changes. I would say safe and progressive stress is the key to making changes long term. Now, if you're pushing, someone's pushing your leg like that and stretching the tissue, yes, there's an element of stress to it, but because the other side of the joint is weak and it can't hold that position, you will not make change. I guarantee it, you will not make change. Unless you're stretching literally every single day for like, you know, the majority of your day, all the time, sure. But because you're always doing it, you're going to feel that. The best way to tell if you're actually mobile, test yourself before you stretch, before you warm up, before you sweat. Your cold mobility when you wake up is the best indication of where you're actually at. If you can do 2-minute hamstring stretch on each side and touch your toes, great. But if before that you can't, okay, wake up the next morning and try and touch your toes. If you can't touch your toes, you made no change. There's no net gain because you are only increasing passive flexibility. You have to use active work to get into these range of motions and these positions that you want to get into.
Yeah, and I hope everybody out there listening heard that because that's key. And, you know, even if it's not even a person, like if you have a band stretching your hamstrings or if, you know, you're putting your arm against the wall and trying to get more range of motion, like you have to use your body. You said something that you said your body is very smart. I say all the time, your body's a lot smarter than you are. So, you know, don't try to outsmart it. And it's like you have to find a way to use your body or your body's not going to respond to you. So just adding on to that, like what do you think instead of, you know, that hamstring stretch, or what can somebody do that's maybe like maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes max a day that they can kind of get their tight areas, you know, rocking and rolling without just that passive stretching?
Yeah. Here's the thing. I think passive stretching is still important. And the reason I say that is because it is a prerequisite to active mobility, right? You have to understand what your passive range of motion is, like that maximum amount that you can be stretched, and then decrease the gap. So if this is your passive flexibility, y'all can't see this, but my hand's up here. And this is your active mobility. You want to decrease that gap. So where your active mobility is now closer to your passive flexibility, and now you just have all active. You can access ranges of motion and get into weird positions without issues, right? The best way to do that is to first get into that passive flexibility, that max end range, and allow your nervous system to chill the fuck out. If you're rolling on, even with rolling, if you're rolling on a tennis ball, a cross ball, or a, you know, one of those rollers, and you're wincing in pain, you're like, you're sweating, and you're like, you're not gonna make change. Your body is literally going to fight against you. Your body's number one priority is survival. Doesn't give a fuck if you wanna get shredded, doesn't give a shit if you wanna touch your toes, doesn't give a shit if you wanna fucking do back bends. Your body is designed to keep you alive. Your nervous system is designed to keep you alive. And the only way to make change is to first teach your brain that, hey, I can be strong here, right? I'm comfortable here. So whenever you're doing any kind of mobility work, your best bet is to try and keep your breath relaxed. You're going to sweat. You're going to work. But don't be like, you're like going super hard all the fucking time. You're wincing and you're in pain, like especially pain. Pain is going to be the biggest deterrent to any kind of change you want to make. Working hard, absolutely important. And you'll see me in some of my videos. I'm working hard. I'm breathing, but I'm not in pain and I'm not pushing myself too far. You got to find that threshold, right? So let's go back to that hamstring stretch. Let's say someone holds your leg like that for 2 minutes. The next step is for you to squeeze the fuck out of your quad. They're going to let your leg go and try and hold that position and try to decrease the leg coming down, because there's going to be some give. Like your leg is going to come down a little bit, but using your quad, that's obviously hip flexors too, maybe some anterior tib in the front of the leg. But using that whole front side of your leg, try to maintain that height. And you can do the same thing with any kind of stretch. Let's take that running stretch people do where they stand up and they pull their heel to their butt. Do that for like a minute or two and then let go of the hand and try to keep your heel towards your butt. You're probably going to cramp, and that's a good thing. So cramping is essentially neurological confusion from your brain. Your central nervous system works this way. There's a communication between your brain and motor units and your muscles. And when that connection isn't very efficient or isn't channeled consistently, your brain doesn't really know how to communicate with the muscles. that's why we have unintentional movement when we're trying to do things. Your brain's trying to fire to those muscles, but it's like, I got nothing for you. So your brain tries to recruit stuff around that muscle to help that motion be completed. That's why we have things like lumbar extension, or when your lower back curves in like a deadlift or in a squat when you come up from it. You're trying to produce hip extension, but your body cannot produce that force because it doesn't know how to. So, but it's going to get there. Your body has this concept called path of least resistance. When it's trying to get from A to B, it's going to get there, but that path might not always be efficient. And that's where mobility comes into play. Mobility is not just being able to put your arms over your head and go into crazy positions. It's control. It's mind muscle connection, neuromuscular control, also known as. Having active mobility is having intentional movement at specific parts of your body to accomplish an A to B exercise or movement, right? And doing that as efficient as possible without recruiting a lot of stuff. So just to kind of connect the dots, the first time you ran outside or on the treadmill or whatever for like, I don't know, 20 minutes, right? You're probably tired as shit. Your body's very inefficient in that motion. It doesn't really know how to do it. But the more you do it, the better you learn how to do it. Your aerobic capacity increases, or the amount of air you can utilize throughout your body, the amount of air you can pull into your lungs, and thereby increase the energy system's efficiency to actually use your muscles to move, right? But the first time you do that, you suck at it. It's natural. We all did. I did, right? But the more you do it and the more you communicate that central nervous system and the other energy systems and physiological systems interplaying to create that motion, the better you get at it. It's the same thing with mobility. You got to teach your brain that, hey, I'm going to use this shit to do this thing. And the more you communicate in a safe and progressive manner through stressing and loading the tissue, the better you're going to see change.
Yeah. And you said something hard. I mean, that was so fucking in depth. So I just want to say that was fucking cool. Thanks, but man. Like, one thing that you said is like, you kept repping on like, yeah, it's going to be hard work. It's going to be hard work. And I think like what people think hard work is like you said, like I'm going to go in and burn a lot of calories, or I'm going to, you know, lift as much as I can or do as much as I can. And honestly, like, I think the working out is not the hard work. And it's like the eating might be hard. Yeah. But like, even from working with you, like I knew I was working hard, but like, I knew there was something missing and I wasn't working hard enough because I wasn't feeling the best I could. And after we started working, I'm like, okay, these fucking pails and rails are hard. Like doing that extra shit that takes you that extra step, it might be tedious, it might be monotonous, it might be boring at first, but you're going to challenge yourself. And it's going to be that hard work that's going to get you away from your low back pain, your shoulder pain, your hip pain, whatever it is. Like right. Taking that extra step to take that and really do that quote unquote hard work, even though you're not maybe sweating or you're not maybe, you know, lifting a bunch of weight or running as fast as you can, like that quote unquote hard work of doing this mobility stuff to get you healthy, to let you do more of that heavy lifting and heavy right. running and whatever it is, like that is going to be, like you said, where you connect the dots and really see changes in your body. Great point coming off of that is like, I just want to go through head to toe. Like you see so much shit every day with people, like how they move, what their movements are, what a lot of flaws are, like just kind of like, if you want to go through a quick, like head to toe, like joint, like what do you see as the most common limitations and or faults just going from joint head to toe?
Yeah. Yeah. So when I assess people, I assess, you know, their entire body.
Can I just hop it? I need to interrupt. You did a fucking assessment on me that took an hour and 45 minutes. And I was like, this fucking dude is serious. Like he like, yeah, it might take 45 minutes. It ended up being almost fucking 2 hours. I'm like, I know this dude's fucking serious. He cares about what he's fucking doing. So I just want to say that was badass. Continue, man. Sorry.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. You know, everybody's bodies are so different and you have to respect the individual necessity per body. So yeah, sometimes my assessments do take an hour. Sometimes they take 2 hours. You were actually probably the longest assessment I've ever had, but that's because we were like going back and forth, like relating it to, hey, you're seeing this dysfunction here. How does that relate to your lift? How does that relate to this? And you were like, oh shit, that makes sense. Like kind of connecting those dots was huge. So, you know, a big part of my platform is like education so that you can then take this for yourself and then for your clients and just like, you know, pay it forward to help other people. But so before I get into head to toe, whenever I look at someone, I can instantly see things. And that's sort of the double-edged sword with becoming more aware of the body. I find myself when I see people walking, when I see people talking or just in resting positions, it tells a story. I can see you. without you understanding what you're doing, right? And that's when we want to look at someone. We don't want to look at someone when they're like aware, right?
Oh, yeah, chest up, shoulders back. Neutral spine.
You know what I'm saying? I want to see you when you're like fucking hanging out with your friends, just like drinking a beer or like relaxing, sitting on a chair, like walking without me seeing, right? That is the best way to see you in your natural position. Because like I said before, everything you've done up until this point, your body has adapted to, right? When you move a certain way, your body adapts and it creates what we call imbalances, but it's really just adaptation. And I'm going to quote this. I don't remember who said this. I want to say it was either John Ewan or Dr. Andreos Spina, but the only symmetrical body is the one that's on paper. No one's symmetrical. Everybody has imbalances. Everybody. I don't give a fuck who you are. There is something in your body that is not completely identical from left hip to right hip or left shoulder to right shoulder. Everybody has something different. That's the first thing. So going from head to toe, with the neck, I typically see people unable to go into actual cervical flexion. And what I mean by that is if you gave yourself a double chin to where you can kind of see the chin rolls, and then if you actually try to – and I'm having a hard time speaking – but if you try to actually pull into your neck and feel a stretch in the back of your cervical spine, no one can do that shit anymore. No one. And posture is a very complicated topic. I don't like to say there's a good and bad posture. I don't even like to use that word because it's been demonized to have rounded posture, right? And I don't think rounded posture is necessarily bad. So I'll say the only posture that's bad is the one that you're in like all the time. Because if you try to access different postures in the gym, like if you're a corporate person who sits and rounds their back and, you know, their head's protruding forward all the time, if you're trying to retract your cervical spine, try to get actual thoracic extension without rib flare, you're going to have trouble. Just because your body has adapted to be in that position. So when you're trying to get a neutral spine and rotate your spine for rows or even slight thoracic extension for your rows to fill your lats, it's going to be hard. But that's the first thing. Just being able to retract the neck and actually get work done in the front of the neck, very, very difficult. Scapula, people don't even know how to move their scapula. Most people think their scapula and their shoulders are the same thing, but they're actually very different and have very different uses. So just being able to get into scapular elevation or shrugging, right, or protraction where your shoulder blades are kind of rounding forward and the scapula themselves are pushing forward and you're using your serratus anterior, or if you've ever seen Spider-Man, the Spider-Man muscles on the side kind of like that kind of run into the obliques, like that's your serratus, that's your obliques, like using those muscles to get protraction or actual scapular retraction. Think about pitching a $100 bill on your back. I see a lot of rib flare. And I'm not going to go through every joint in the body just because, you know, I don't want to bore people, but the biggest thing,
although we could, it would be cool.
Yeah, we definitely could. And we have, right?
Yeah.
I think the biggest things that I see lacking in people are rotation. So shoulder rotation and hip rotation. So your shoulders and your hips are ball and socket joints, meaning that they can move in just about or literally in every plane of motion possible. So you have sagittal plane, frontal plane, and transverse plane. Sagittal plane is front to back. So think about a back lunge or a front lunge. Frontal plane is any kind of side to side motion. So think like a lateral lunge where you're kind of like a side to side lunge, right? And transverse plane is anything rotation. So think about swinging a bat to hit a baseball or throwing a baseball or a football or anything that requires rotation is in the transverse plane. And I find that when it comes to rotation or that transverse plane, people just can't do it. They can't rotate. Internal rotation specifically is probably the most lacking motion I see with shoulders and hips. So let me see if I can demonstrate this through voice. So if you want to see what your internal rotation is like, I think it's harder on shoulder, but for hip, it's relatively easy to do. If you lay on your back, lift your knee to be in line with your hip and have your heel in line with your knee, right? So 90 degrees of knee flexion and 90 degrees of hip flexion. Now you're going to take your finger and put it on the top of your kneecap. That cannot move. You can't translate or shift side to side, down and back. Your knee has to stay in the exact position it is. And you're going to think what my good guy Clayton calls shoulder or a hip guacamole, where you're trying to basically rotate the head of the femur, which is the head of or the top of your leg bone that sits in the pelvic socket that creates your hip, because joints are basically just a junction between two things, right? Your hip joint is your head of the femur sitting in the ball and sock, like ball of the pelvis, and that forms the ball and socket joint or the hip. So you're basically going to take your leg and try to rotate your bottom leg outside of your body without your knee moving. That is your hip internal rotation. That may feel funky. You might feel cramping or, you know, just shitty. And that's because you probably haven't tried to access that position actively, probably ever. Most people that I come into contact with, they're like, what the hell is this? I don't even know what I'm doing. And they may get like 5 or 10 degrees of rotation. And I think internal rotation is one of the most important motions to have, specifically because when you have more internal rotation and you can intentionally load the internal rotators of the hip and shoulder, you have now allowed your hip and shoulders to distribute force and load across the hip and shoulders evenly. What happens when your external rotators are dominant in motions, you can only really distribute load actively and intentionally to that part of your hip. And not only are you going to be dominant on that side, but the motion itself is going to be restricted. Capsule space for actual rotation. And this concept actually makes sense for me when I was learned it from a lot of people that I've talked to, because a lot of people want to squat better. A lot of people want to go overhead better. So they think flexion, flexion, overhead, stretch my lats, you know, get overhead, you know, hold my knee to my chest. Linear motions are improved when your rotation motions are improved, right? If there's more space in your shoulder and hip capsule to rotate, there is inherently more space to do linear motions like flexion, like extension and abduction and adduction, where you're trying to access linear stuff and it ain't working. Work on your rotation, then you'll start to see that linear trail open up way more and you'll be able to sink deeper in your squat. You'll be able to get more overhead. And then after you access that range of motion, then stabilize it, which is a whole nother topic.
Yeah. Yeah. And I should have asked you that question, honestly, but that was great because I wanted to say, like, how much do you think just controlling that shoulder and that hip can normally just fix a lot of shit for people?
Big time. Big time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you can get control of those two joints, I think you don't have control over your entire body, but man, I think that can help you fix a lot of shit.
Big time. The biggest thing I see with hips specifically, people don't know how to really use their hips. Just a basic hip hinge, lots of lumbar extension, lots of rib flare, some knee buckling, right? Knee valgus, which isn't a bad position. I can sit in knee valgus all I want, but I've trained that position. Like I'm strong there. However, if people are unintentionally accessing other joint motions when they're trying to access a specific motion, that's when we have issues. We call that coupling. So, for instance, when people want, like I talked about earlier, hip extension, which is basically kicking back and activating your glutes, when people want that, we tend to see a lot of lumbar extension and rib flare, right? And that's when your spinal erectors
and I'm raising my hand.
you tend to see a lot of spinal erectors, QL, and like that whole lower junction on each side be just fucked up because it's overworked, it's tight. And I typically see it in a asymmetrical standpoint. So typically, one side of their hip or one hip can extend better than the other. And the one that can't extend better, that's when you start to see lateral shifting to that stronger hip. And it may not necessarily even be like stronger. The range of motion and strength within a specific range of motion is more active and thereby stronger. So if you're – think about it this way. If you're in a squat, right, there's a lot of things going on there. You got hip flexion or your knees are moving toward your chest and a hip external rotation where your hips, the femur is turning outside and it's like rotating outwards, right? That's what that people say, you know, knees out, they really mean hip abduction and external rotation. But if you can't do that, if your hips cannot externally rotate in deep hip flexion, it doesn't matter how many times I scream at you, knees out, knees out, knees out, you ain't going to be able to change. And then from that deep position, if you can't produce force from that position into hip extension because you've never actually accessed that position actively, what's going to happen? Lumbar extension, rib flare. Your body's going to get there again. It's just not going to get there as efficient.
Yeah, and that's what you're going back on earlier, like form. You can have the best quote-unquote form, but if your joints can't do the movement correctly, it doesn't matter how fucking good your form is, you will not be able to complete the movement safely and effectively and most optimally.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
So let's talk. So if just helping some of my clients out, if you have, you know, Sally, a mom who's 35 and has three kids, like what is like a 5 or 10 minute routine she can do for just her shoulders and her hips, like a day, not even every day, just maybe a couple times a week, that doesn't take her that long because, you know, they have work and they have kids and they have time responsibilities and this and that. So like, what do you think is like a 5 or 10 minute routine that's not too in depth, but can probably help some people out?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. I'm not going to lie. I struggle getting my mobility on point, like my routine on point sometimes. I think, one, allocating space on your calendars for yourself is very, very important. So I do my mobility stuff in the morning, right when I wake up. I have my water. I open up my window, get a lot of sunlight, and I do something called CARS. They're controlled articular rotations, basically taking your joint through every range of motion possible in your specific end ranges. So my CARS are going to look different from your CARS. They're going to look different from Eric's CARS. They're going to be – everyone's going to look different. And that's important to understand. So like form in a CAR is not the same because your end range and my end range are going to be different. So in the morning, I would say allocate like 10 minutes to do CARS. And I'm actually going to, hopefully we can get some links in there in your description of the podcast. I want to put my guy Ian Marco's full body CAR routine. It's online, it's free. And he just gives it out like, you know, like wildfire. And I always spread it. He's amazing. Definitely follow him on Instagram if you're not already. Very, very smart guy. He's taught me a shit ton. But so CARS are going to teach your body how to not just rotate better, but to feel stuff. And I really want people to be more mindful and aware. I think awareness is like 90% of the battle. So when you go into shoulder flexion or starting to lift your arm over your head, what do you feel moving that? What do you feel stretching? What do you feel shortening? When you do, just say something more common that people actually do, like a lunge, what are you feeling? Like, do you feel your leg? Like, do you feel your hamstring and your glute if you're in a more hip-dominant lunge? Do you feel your quad if your knee angle is smaller and your knee's more forward? Like, what do you feel? Because if you're just doing shit and you don't feel anything, are you actually working? Are you actually loading tissue? Like, yeah, you are because you have weight on you, but when it gets into like the details and the minute stuff, when actually trying to, you know, build muscle or increase strength, intentional load is very, very important. Because if you're loading your lumbar spine every time you do a lunge because your lumbar spine is extended and your ribs are all flared out, you're not really loading your legs as much as you think you are. Your lumbar spine is taking a lot of that tension and a lot of that load. So CARS are really important for me because they teach the body independence before interdependence. So learning how to feel each specific joint in the body and then learning how to put it all together and work in unison. And I think this is especially important for lifting. A lot of the lifting we do happens in the sagittal plane, front to back, up and down. Like there's not a lot of like side to side or rotation. And that's okay because those are the easiest, like sagittal plane is the easiest to load a lot of weight. Like it's just, you can, like, right? Like, it's really, really easy to load a back lunge with a shit ton of weight, but it's fucking hard to load a side lunge with a lot of fucking weight, right? You're at end range hip abduction and that stretching leg. You're loading one side. Like, it's just things we don't typically train pretty often. But, I just think that that intentional movement, mind muscle connection, and that awareness is so huge. So just CARS every single day. And then when you kind of dive deeper into the FRC stuff, pails and rails are really important and they're really helpful for increasing range of motion. And then obviously stability, which I guess we can cover on a different podcast, is also a very, 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 very important thing.
Yeah, and I love that you said cars, because I knew what they were, but when we started working together, I could really see the difference in what my femur was actually, what my hip was actually doing. Like, was I actually going into extension, or was it my lumbar spine? Like, was I actually adducting, or like, what was I doing? So like, just like you said, allocating that 5 or 10 minutes a day just to know what your body is doing. If you don't know what your body's doing, how can you make it better? So like, I love that. That's huge, man. Like you said, you can go to, if you're listening, you go to Ian Marco's YouTube and look that up. Or I know Karan has a bunch on there, so you can go on his Instagram and go on there. I'll link his Instagram in there as well. I know we're getting short on time here. One last question is, if there was one thing that you wish you knew before you started online coaching, before you started just in this whole space, what would it be?
This answer might surprise you. It has nothing to do with training. It has nothing to do with movement. Nothing to do with nutrition. It is faith and belief. In myself.
I love that. Yeah.
In myself. I'm very critical of myself, and I have been since I was a kid. You know, I got bullied a lot when I was a kid, so it made me like hate myself for a while. And I think a lot of people go through that, and it's tough to like really look at yourself critically without diminishing your character, right? I think when people fail, I see it in my clients. I've seen it in myself, even sometimes to this day, but I have that mental trigger. I'm like, no. You're not at fault. Your process was, right? Oftentimes when people are trying something new, whether it be a new lifestyle for nutrition and, you know, if they're trying diets or a new movement in the gym, if they fail or they don't get it right to what they think is right, like, oh, I'm an idiot. I'm a fucking dumbass. Like, oh, I'm a fucking moron. Or like, oh, I suck, right? They diminish their personality and their human, they're like their self, right? For a movement or messing up on a program, like, you're not an idiot. You're not a moron, right? You just messed up. The process just didn't fit you, and it's okay. And growing up and starting to get into this online stuff and even personal training, I'd made a shit ton of mistakes. All the mistakes, right? And every time I'd mess up, I would shit on myself. I'd say, Karan, you're a fucking idiot. Like, I would literally say that to myself out loud. And that self-talk impacts you more than you know. So look, we're going to get a little deep here with the rabbit hole, but this is important. Adaptation is everything, right? So from a physiological standpoint, when you apply stress and do all the pails and rails, everything we've talked about today, right? You make change. It's the same shit with your brain and how you speak to yourself. If you tell yourself every fucking day that you're an idiot, you are an idiot. If you tell yourself every day that you are inadequate, you are inadequate. You speak how you behave, and the two interplay with each other. You speak that shit into existence, it happens. And no like mumbo jumbo, bougie hoogie, whatever, like, you know, shades and mirrors and magic and shit. It's just the way you talk to yourself. You truly start to believe it. And for a long ass time, man, I would look in the mirror and see someone I didn't love. Like, I didn't love myself. I didn't believe that I was adequate. And I was so hard on myself. And I think so many people today they're just so hard on themselves. Like, give yourself a fucking break, especially if you're trying something you don't know. You're going to make mistakes. Look forward to the mistakes, because that's just another failure you can learn from and improve your process with. So that's what I'd say I wish I knew before.
Dude, I fucking love that, man. I fucking love that, because anybody who knows me and follows me and what I do and what I believe, it's like, this shit is so much more in depth than just like, go do mobility, go do muscles, go like, you know, lift some weights and eat well. Like, there's so much other shit that goes on inside your head. If yeah. your head is not right, nothing else is going to fall in place, man. Nothing else is going to fall in place. And what you're just saying, I'm going to add one quick point. It's like, you have to be conscious of these things. Like, most people don't even realize like they're saying these things to themselves.
Absolutely.
Like, get conscious of what the fuck you're saying to yourself. Like, most people wouldn't treat their worst enemy the way they treat themselves sometimes.
Oh, so true, dude.
Dude, it's fucking nuts, man. And it's like, but you're not even conscious of it. So if you're conscious, you're like, why the fuck am I telling myself I'm a fucking asshole? Like you just said, like, I'm just trying it out. Like, this is my first week on a diet. This is my first time trying this move. My first time doing mobility work. Like, why am I being such a dick to myself? Like, yeah. If you're conscious of what you're thinking and believing, like, that shit is going to manifest in so many more ways than just fitness or nutrition, like your life, your relationships, like you just said, how you feel about yourself. And I'm already thinking another podcast because we could go so much more in depth on this. And it sounds like we would vibe on this very, very, very fucking well. So I'm excited for the other podcast already. So, dude, I fucking love that, man. Kron, thank you so much, bro. Tell the people how they can reach you, how they can follow your stuff. I know you have a podcast, Instagram. Just shout that out real quick so my guys can go listen to you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So my Instagram, Coach Kronic, CoachKronic. That's basically every social media platform you can find me on. My podcast is the Kronic Lifestyle Podcast. Definitely got to get you on there, bro.
Yeah, that'd be dope.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. Twitter, Coach Kronic 1. You can also email me any questions. I'm literally all day, I answer DMs and questions, like, for free. I don't charge nobody for a fucking question. Yesterday someone asked me about their diet and they want to get cut. They want to build their arms. And I found out that she was eating like 900 calories a day and fasting the rest of the day. And I was like, fuck. And bro, I kid you not, I sent her like 12 videos of me explaining metabolic adaptation, explaining calories and, you know, stress and hormones and homeostasis for free. I didn't charge her a dime. I just did it. Like, and the reason for that is because so many people live in pain. They live in like ignorance. They don't know, right? So if I can educate someone to make changes for themselves and they can help somebody else and teach somebody else, yo, that is what life is about, man. That is like my mission, to fucking change lives and make impact. Like, that's all it is. But yeah, Coach Kronic. And if you want to email me, you can go coachkronic@kronic.fit. Again, my inbox is open. Hit me up.
Bro, that's so dope. And I honestly think some people actually be emailing you, at least from my perspective, because I know like people just have questions and they know that they can always reach out to me. So if I have you on, you say you can reach out to you, then like, I think they're going to reach out to you. I think it's fucking dope, bro. Kron, this was so dope, man. Like, I really fucking enjoyed this. This was the longest podcast I've ever done, but this is the funnest one because most fun, whatever. But we just dive in so much shit. So I really appreciate it, bro. Thank you so much, man. And definitely if I'm ever allowed to be on yours, man, that would be fucking cool as well.
Absolutely, bro. Thank you so much for having me.
No doubt, bro. Thank you so much, man.
Peace.